You're listening to Movie Sucktastic.
Are you threatening me?
No.
Fuck out of here, you're fired. Who the fuck do you think you are, you crazy little shit?
I know it. It all sounds like some bad movie.
Oh, it sure does.
Don't it now?
Oh, it does. Donut, you think so? We have these signs on our highways. One of them is donut, spelled like the pastry. Donut, get distracted. Don't eat and drive. It's like, wow. That's the message.
Anyway, movie's fantastic
maybe if,
here.
Maybe if traffic wasn't so bad and we weren't overpopulated, people wouldn't have to eat while they fucking drive
to get to work on time. Not a good opening.
No,
we're not on a good foot.
I'm an angry person. I'm sorry.
Welcome to Movie Sucktastic. We talk about movies here. I'm Scott. The angry one is Joey. Oddly, usually it's the other way around. I'm a little confused. And today we're reviewing the 2001 hit Swordfish. Well, it did well in the box office. It made like what, 140?
147, but it cost 100 million.
So it made us. I mean, it made us money.
I mean,
back.
It did fine. It broke even. They weren't making any sequels, and it cost enough money. It came out on June 8th, 2001. So,
but a critical flop.
Well, yeah, June 8th. I mean, 3 months before the September 11th. Actual terrorist attacks.
Oh, the worst timing of the world. Actually, you know what?
It was the best timing because it came out before September 11th. So there were movies. What was that movie with Tim Allen? Well, the one movie that comes to mind is Collateral with Schwarzenegger. Mm-hmm. That got pushed back because of the terrorist ties into that movie.
Mm-hmm. Same thing happened to Top Dog after the First Trade Center bombing, the one in the garage. That was the Chuck Norris film.
Oh, Top okay. Dog. Well, there was a movie. It came out. Let's see, 2001. Big Trouble. It's called Big Trouble with
Tim. Bomb on the Plane.
Yes,
Tim Dave Barry.
Yes, and the only reason why they pulled it was because there's a plane that's, you know, in the trailer it shows that it's going to crash, and it was like.
Oh, there's a bomb on the plane.
Right. And it was like, you know what? Yeah. No, absolutely not. We're not releasing this movie. It was supposed to come out. I want to say its original release date was September, like a week or so before the terrorist attacks, or a week or two after. And it got pushed to like 6 months later, like to April, like 8 months later, like April of 2002. Mm-hmm. Of course, it did horribly. You know, it did horribly, even though they pushed it. But from what I can see here, it actually wasn't released. It wasn't released anywhere until 2002. So, but anyhow.
Right. So I will say that it was good for the movie. But however, what's his fucking character's name in this? Gabriel. If Gabriel had just waited 3 months, he could have got all the funding he needed to go after terrorists.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems like a waste of time now.
Yeah.
Or effort, I should say. But I'm watching it. I was like, 2001, man. Yeah, this shouldn't be out.
But it came out before
3 months before,
yeah,
right?
Three
yeah,
three,
I think it was like 3 months before. Yeah. So the film Swordfish 2001. It's an action packed hacker heist thriller.
Right.
In which Wolverine is recruited by, I guess a cross between Travolta's character. I was thinking a cross between his character in Get Shorty and actually Quentin Tarantino.
Oh, okay.
That opening scene is like, all right, so Tarantino is a heist person. I got you. But then the only I'll get to that part later. Sorry. Yeah, and so he Gabriel recruits what's Wolverine's name in this?
It's Stanley.
Stanley.
What a manly Stanley.
Gabriel gets Ginger, Halle Berry, to recruit Stanley to help them hack into this bank system to collect all these leftover CIA funds from some kind of shell corporations used for drug running back in the good old days.
Right.
So and that's the basic plot. So but what it really is just a bunch of action sequences and a thinly woven plot about hacking and with very realistic hacking shown on the screen, right?
Oh, the bigliest of hacker type stuff.
Actually, there's a great article. I'll find the link and I'll put it under the YouTube video link. I don't know how we could get it to the podcast people, but I pulled up this article from 2015 where they got this major hacker, like somebody that like went to prison and stuff. I think he had the thing with NBC too, and they asked him to try to break it down, and it's just fucking hilarious.
Oh, really?
You know, he links to another article, and that one's even more geeky. It's kind of like Moss in IT Crowd, like laughing at the circuit board. Some idiot put the line right through the divider. What's going on? But apparently everything here is everything in this film about computers, like most Hollywood films. Totally inaccurate. Like one thing, the DES 128-bit encryption that he's has to hack.
Yeah.
I think DES as a whole, the DES system, if I'm correct, they were actually looking to phase it out around that time. I think they had started looking for an alternative in like 97. So, and that was one listed among all the other criticisms and the most comprehensible to anybody that's not into any technology. But I think that was probably intentional, because why would you like clue audiences into the next way to hack into your government? Use the way that's so antiquated that like we're not even going to use that anymore. That was on purpose.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing too. I mean, they talk about the 120 bit and 128 bit encryption, and that's what they use to kind of test him to see if he could do it while he's getting a blowjob from some, you know, Helga. Was her name Helga? No.
Does it matter?
It doesn't. But Hilda? I don't know. I think it was an ugly name for a pretty girl.
But It doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter. So they're testing him to see if he can crack the 128-bit, but they also talk about 512-bit and then later on, you know, 1024. So they are talking about newer technologies later in the movie.
Right.
But they start off with one that is being phased out. But they're talking about
them as if they're but they're talking about them like they're space age, not like, well, like
they,
currently.
So I get why they did it. So in the beginning, it's like, listen, this is 128-bit. This shit's hard. All right. And then they're saying, well, that's not what I actually need you for. I actually need you to, you know, to decrypt a 512. It's like, whoa, wait a minute. 512, that's fucking insane. and it's like, can you do it? Nothing's impossible. It's like, okay, so he's gonna try and do it, but we're letting the audience know that this shit's hard.
I'd actually like to say that hacking the DoD in 60 seconds actually is impossible. as stated by many hackers a decade later. just saying.
Of course. And then, later on in the movie, it's 1024, and he does that also in 60 seconds. So it's like, he is the best. He is Hacker Jesus.
We love Hacker Jesus.
Listen, I pray to Hacker Jesus every day.
Yeah, so Hugh Jackman plays hacker. I love it. Okay, so let's make sure we get like some beefcake to play the hacker, because all computer hackers are obviously gorgeous. Oh, gorgeous people.
Yeah, I mean...
They go to the like the experts in this for the government, and they're just like nerds with that like the bad clothing and body odor and overweight and geeky and these are the other hackers, like even the one that they started off with the beginning.
Oh yeah,
like, oh yeah, the shifty kind of,
you mean Mr. Calvin Klein?
Yeah. What the fuck's up with that? So
it looked pretty good with
by the way,
a hole in
that opening, completely useless.
Of course, absolutely. Yeah, no, absolutely.
I might take the trash out later.
Well, listen, I am going to say something. This movie is better than it was initially rated back when it came out.
Agreed. When the backlash was one of those. Yeah.
The backlash when this came out was horrific. I mean, I think it's got a 26% on Rotten Tomatoes from critic scores. That is. Listen, we know Hollywood doesn't get technology right. So we're just going to pan this. We're not going to look at anything that they might have done that was good or entertaining in any way. We are just going to flat out just shit on this. And then, of course, you know, shit rolls downhill. So every critic that, you know, it hit on the way down was like, yeah, you're right. This is shit. this opening alone is just asking me to give it a bad review.
That the opening is the most bizarre part of the film for me, because it doesn't really jive with all it's doing is drawing attention to you that this is a film and Hollywood films are bad and unrealistic. So I don't understand what the screenwriter / filmmaker was trying to do, because you're risking drawing negative attention to the fact that it's a film, being self-aware.
Right.
And secondly, what is the setup really about? I don't get it. Because films aren't mentioned. It's like they aren't mentioned anywhere else for the entire film except during the flying bus sequence.
Yeah, no. What I think it comes down to, if I had to guess, the screenwriter probably was like, you know, I always wanted to open a movie like this or have some like dialogue like this, and he put it in this movie.
I blame Tarantino.
Maybe.
This is all. I blame Tarantino and Elmore Leonard, the and Get Shorty and all that shit. That's what I blame. That's what they're going for here. That's what the writer was going for. They could have just cast Tarantino as Gabriel if they wanted to do that and make it all about film and like mixing. But here's my big problem with it is that.
And honestly, like in that time period, it probably wouldn't have been that hard to get Tarantino because he didn't know what the fuck he was doing at that.
Well,
time.
Well, no, but he was champing at the bit to fucking act.
Well, that's what I'm saying. He didn't know what he was doing at the time. He was like, am I going to direct movies? Am I going to write movies?
Movies? He knew what he was doing. He was trying to do everything.
Well, he was, but there was a period of time after he did Pulp Fiction where he was doing just movies.
Yeah.
He was only doing movies. I mean, Kill Bill came out, what, later that year or the following year? No, it came out in 2003. He did Jackie Brown, and then he's like, that's it. I'm acting for a while.
Anyway,
Why? So, I'm talking about what you're talking about. What are you doing?
No, I. Anyway, he goes through that whole thing about bad movies, and specifically talks about Dog Day Afternoon, and saying that the ending should have been different, but it's based on a true story. Then in the flying bus sequence, he says, "Have you ever seen Sugarland?" Sugarland Express, hated the ending. Again, another based on a true story film.
Right.
Now, we could be establishing something, but the problem is it only comes up those two times at the very beginning of the film, so you can forget it, and then at the end of the film, we're like, what the fuck is this about? It's a cute line, but with just two is not a series. It doesn't like. That's why the rule of threes. You have to have at least three to set up either the next in the series or to defeat the expectations of what you're going to hear next, you know, for the humor. So, or have it more. It just comes up twice.
It does.
So I don't know what he's trying to get at with, I just want to change the endings. But, like, not every Hollywood film has the villain goes to jail. Like, it's just very convoluted.
Yeah.
And it has nothing else to do with the rest of the film.
No, it doesn't. And that's, again, it's a screenwriter that probably wanted to incorporate that in some way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it really just comes down to.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, that's like a part I like, kind of, but it just doesn't land. And it's also buried in the time-honored, take an action sequence from the middle of the film and put it at the beginning.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a summer blockbuster. They're trying to do something summer blockbustery so that it kicks off the movie. So you're in the theater, it's got the crazy surround sound, and it's going to blow your face off. You know, all these other action movies you've seen, you haven't seen anything like this before, or if you have, they haven't done it this good. So that's what that was. I mean, it's a blockbuster, and they're like, listen, we're going to throw the whole kitchen sink at this in the beginning just to get you in the door.
But just take what I'm getting at is I know opening with an action sequence is a good point like that, but my point is that this is the time-honored thing where you just take a segment out of the front of the film, put it in the beginning, and then say, oh, 4 weeks ago, which is what or this film does, 4 weeks ago.
But yes.
Or four days earlier, but sorry. But, I mean, Jesus Christ.
Can you imagine if the toll of this is 4 weeks?
Yeah, no, I misspoke. Yeah, my bad.
No, I'm just saying. Just think about that.
How long is he staying at that house? Yeah, no, it definitely can't.
To come to fruition, it takes 4 weeks. It's like, I'm out of here. What the fuck? No way. Mm-hmm. Can't do that. I don't think so.
I think the most annoying thing of the entire film, I mean, I like the action sequences. The writing's weak, and I won't get into it, but that fucking earring. Every goddamn scene, I'm like, oh, there's the earring. I can't not look at the earring.
I think that was the point.
No, it's distracting as shit. I hated it.
Well, listen, they don't care that you hated it.
They do. That they want you to like the film. I'm just they make mistakes, you know.
Well, yeah.
Jeez, I mean, I'll tell you straight out. I've already re-edited the film.
I mean, you didn't like Travolta's, airline strip on his chin?
Oh, I asked Holly, says, "What should I do that for the show tonight?" She's like, please don't. Please don't. It looks like a vagina. Please don't do that.
Yeah, the landing strip.
Oh, just this desperate need to make him different than his other characters somehow. Because at this point, he's just doing his post-Tarantino shtick. Or yeah, you know, he's doing Broken Arrow, and like it's all melds together.
As, oh,
I'm the wacky guy. I mean, he did other stuff too. He did a shitload of stuff. He's a good actor.
Well, here's the thing. After he did Pulp Fiction, he had a resurgence.
That was resurgence. Yeah,
you know, like everybody wanted Travolta to be in their film. Everybody. So for, I would say, a good 7 to 10 years. He was one of Hollywood's hottest actors. It's like, oh, we're getting Travolta for this, you know? So, I mean, like he was making movies like where he played Michael, the Archangel.
Yep.
That shouldn't have been a hit. Under no circumstances should that have been a hit.
It did better than it should have. Yeah. You know? I mean, no, he was a huge draw. They were throwing him in every film possible.
What was that other movie he did? Where he had like telekinesis or
Phenomenon.
Yeah. That was another hit.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck?
I like that one.
I'm not saying it's not good. I'm just saying there's no reason why it should have been a hit.
And again, these are films where he's playing characters other than what is in this film, but he did a lot of films where he's just lapsed into this, like, Tarantino-esque, wacky villain, but likable, but, you know, dangerous. And so only way to make us forget is Travolta, I guess, was just put a vagina on his chin.
Oh, yeah, he did White Man's Burden. What did I do?
We saw that in the theater.
We did see that in the theater.
Yep.
And I still, to this day, I put pepper in my ketchup from a French fries because of that movie.
Salt.
Salt and pepper.
All right.
Obviously, that was a metaphor in the movie because it's white, black.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the role reversal on that.
Halle Berry.
Yes.
Comments.
Unnecessary.
Why? I mean, it's.
I mean, listen. You know, they keep talking about diversions in the movie, and it's that comes all the way at the end of the movie. But they got Halle Berry because she was also like the hot actress to get. Yep. Her and Hugh Jackman had just done X-Men the year before, which, by the way, officially kicked off, hey, we can make a good comic book movie? I didn't realize this.
Yep.
You know, so she's in this movie because she was, you know, a hot actress to get, you know, and let's put it this way. They didn't have to cast her in this role. Any actress could have done this, but because she was the hot actress, it's just another name to throw on the poster. Travolta, you know, Hugh, Jackman, Barry.
Even though she was popular, I think the news getting out about the $500,000 payment for her to show her hoo-has was, I think, cast a negative light on the film. I don't know if it affected box office, but at least the critical response, I think critics were a bit down on that. I don't know why.
But to this day, I think she still denies that she didn't get any extra money to do that.
Well, I mean, she's like half naked through half the film. You know, you got the spread eagle gunshot.
Right, and then you have
there's not much left to expose. But honestly, I think it's worse for her if she didn't get paid extra for flashing.
I mean, she says, "Oh, I didn't get paid any extra," and what that really means is, it's like, listen, my last movie, I made this amount. I want this much for this movie. Okay, let's sign that. And it's taken as, she made $500,000 more for this than she did on her last movie. So obviously, that's because she was topless. And that's not really how that works.
You're never going to find it
written in a contract, given extra monies because boobies were seen.
No, but it could be something verbal that was said and that was put into play. I mean,
I don't think so.
I don't doubt it. But again, I think it's worse for her if she didn't get extra money for doing that. I mean,
I'm sure
that's
the
kind of thing you should.
I'm sure she did.
It was
just a number that her and her agent came up with to say, I will do this movie for this.
That's called
Yes, I will do this.
It's called negotiation.
Yeah, but I don't believe it's like, listen, there's a topless scene in here. I'll do the movie, which in turn means I will do the topless scene. But I want this much money to do it.
You don't think they ask in advance if you'll do nudity, and then if they say they won't, they say, well, what if we give you more? You don't think they do that? They do that.
I mean, I'm sure
a lot of actors, actresses will have in their contract specifically that they won't, or
it's called a no nudity clause, you're right. A lot of actresses have that in their contracts. But some of them don't have it at all, and they'll just agree to the nudity for X amount of dollars. It doesn't mean that there's an extra line item that says, got paid $4 million for the movie and $500,000 to take my top off.
But
you're
just
not going to see that.
You're not going to see it, but that doesn't mean it didn't fucking happen.
I'm not saying
just because there's not a line item doesn't mean she wasn't paid extra.
But that's what I'm saying.
I don't understand what you're saying.
What I'm saying is you're not going to see a line item for nudity. You're just going to see a total number.
Okay. But did she get paid extra?
Don't know. I don't know.
Yes.
Well, listen. She
no one
just
knows.
Because she
but
got
come on.
Paid,
she
listen,
obviously did.
I'm sure she did. And I'm sure because it's a summer blockbuster action movie that pays more than the movie she did previously.
Right. So she got paid more for showing her tits. And then after that, she worked for like Scale or something on Monsters Ball and got raw dogged by Billy Bob Thornton. And then when they wanted her to come on the X-Men 2, she's like, oh, I'm too big of I'm an Oscar winning actress. I don't do ensemble pieces. So then she went on to do Catwoman. Catwoman, which ruined her relationship and put her into a mental breakdown.
Yes, and you seem very happy about both of those.
I am. The cockiness of like, oh, I had an Oscar. I don't do ensemble. I don't work with other actors. What the fuck is this? I'm not doing X-Men for that.
I mean, it just like the assumption that she got paid more for doing nudity. The assumption
that was a press release given by. I'm not making shit out of thin air.
I didn't say you were making it up, but I'm just saying.
That was actually what her agent said. That was what they were said. She's not going to be in X-Men 2 because, of course, people ask. It's not a debatable thing. That's a fact.
Don't get angry.
I'm not getting angry. I'm just saying that's a fact. That's not just me assuming. That's documented.
Why you have to be mad?
Why
you have to be mad?
I'm not mad. I just said. I'm
fucking with you. Would you relax? Calm down. It's okay.
Yeah, what's next?
Messing with you.
What's next?
What's next? I don't know. This episode is not going the way I thought it would go. Listen.
So, what?
No. So we can get off the nudity thing. It's fine. We're done with that.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sure she got paid more money. Who knows what the fucking contract says? Who knows what her previous contract said? I don't care anymore. We're done with it. It's fine. What?
So I re-edited the film.
Okay. How did you re-edit?
All right. I have to get some filler, and unfortunately, there's one gap that I can't fix because the screenwriter sucks. But so the beginning of the film, the first meeting with the senator and the whole airport sequence, completely fucking useless. Don't need it.
Oh yeah, I mean that's just an excuse to get Sam Shepard in the movie somehow.
Yeah, but setting up this other hacker to get busted so we can explain why someone would need a hacker to do a computer heist is so fucking ridiculous. It's not even funny. Now I can't really cut that character out completely because Don Cheadle's introduction is inherently involved with that character. But I cut out that entire airport sequence and the entire first senator. The film starts with a montage shots of Texas and then pulls into the opening sequence, which would be Halle Berry showing up. It's our introduction to his character. There's no reason why we can't start the film like that.
So let me ask you this. So if you take out
the whole action sequence, I forgot to mention that. The whole action sequence at the beginning, take it out, put it at the end of the film where it fucking belongs.
Okay. Well, yeah. If you take out the senator, are you taking the senator out completely?
Just the first thing. We don't need an introduction to him because he only appears in two more scenes, and everything that we need to know about him is clearly established in those two scenes. He's a senator that Gabriel works for, and then he betrays him, and then he kills him. Got rid of that, too.
Oh, you got rid of it. Okay, so the confrontation.
The beginning part. Just the beginning part I got.
So
just
what about the confrontation about him trying to have him killed?
Yeah, no, those two are that's in there. That's part of the plot. That's line. That's important. But the introduction isn't needed. Not only that, here's my point. Here's the reason I got rid of all that stuff in the beginning.
All right.
And just started with Stanley. As we're introduced to Stanley, Stanley doesn't know who the hell Gabriel is. Don Cheadle doesn't know who the hell Gabriel is. They don't know how dangerous he is. They don't know how well connected he is. They have no idea about him. He's like this specter, this ghost. So by not telling the audience anything about him, we have the journey with these two characters. So the reveals happen with it. So I also, even though I do keep in the scene with Don Cheadle interrogating him, I cut out the two henchmen killing him.
Oh, okay.
And I cut out Don Cheadle saying that he's dead later on. And that's all you need. It's never mentioned again, doesn't come up again. So you don't know already that he's capable of killing people. So when you get to the scene where they put the gun to his head and make him crack while he's getting blown, you don't know what he's going to do. It's just kind of more tension technically, but it builds, you kind of lose a bit of tension on that because you know he'll kill him, but not knowing is just as good, I feel.
Sure.
And then, Your big introduction to how dangerous this fucking guy is when they go on the car drive and the senator's goons try to kill him and he pulls out the machine gun.
Sure. No, I get that. Yeah, that's a good edit.
Yeah. And that most of my edits take place in that first 20 minutes of the film. Oh, I also got rid of the mother, the phone call conversation with the mother.
Oh, they got her because she was on The Sopranos. She was not that she was a hot actress, but she was recognizable.
And so you only see her alive in that one phone conversation.
Right.
And all that phone conversation does is painfully, slowly, and just poorly sets up the whole thing about, I'm estranged from my daughter. My wife married a porn star and she won't let me see him. So I need money. But you don't need any of that in that phone call, because Halle Berry sets up half of that information outside the trailer just after, and then Don Cheadle brings up the other half later on.
Yeah, and honestly,
and then you see her dead. I mean, you don't need to see her alive to know she's dead at the end, because it's just it's
well,
unneeded.
Well, listen, I mean, they'd have to cut that out completely, because
No.
Well, I'm just saying they show her dead later on, and the reason the reason they show her dead later on is because her introduction is that she's a terrible mother and not a good person. So you'd have to cut out that phone conversation, and you'd have to cut out her being dead altogether. But how do you do that? Because then now you're taking the mother away from a daughter. What they did was they showed that the mother is not a good mom, so that when she shows up dead later, you don't feel bad. You actually feel good for the fact that she is now going to be with her dad, who she loves, and they show that. That is why they show those scenes.
Well, they do that with the phone call because it's lazy writing. And you don't need to set her up as a horrible mother that way, because she's already set up as a poor mother through Halle Berry and Don Cheadle explaining that she married a porn star and that she's horrible to her kid and they won't give her custody. That's all set up. You don't need it. All it does is put an extra layer of hate on a woman we don't even see again. It's unneeded. So you leave the dead mother because it's all set up to the dead mother. You can have that there. Don't need to have that opening phone call at all.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. I'm saying if you get rid of the opening phone call, I guess you can get rid of them showing her dead.
No.
Because you don't see her until that point.
It doesn't matter if you see her until that point or not. You see a dead woman in he goes to the wife's house. It's her. You don't need to know that. It's inconsequential to have her identify herself for 5 minutes in the opening of the film, because you've forgotten about her until then anyway. As far as like a character, you don't see her again. What does it matter? And you can barely recognize her on the bed. It could be a stand-in for all you know, with the blood on her and the way she's sitting. It doesn't matter. You lose the phone call. You leave everything else. It's fine. And then the only trim I make is to take out that one line of Don Cheadle saying that the hacker's dead. Everything else is fine. And then the one part I can't fix is after he finds the dead mother and porn king, and pulls out Don Cheadle's business card, they just flash to the end of that action sequence because they had it at the beginning of the film. So when I move the action sequence there, all I'm missing is like a 3-minute setup of why they're sitting in the fucking coffee shop having a conversation. And that could have been set up with one shot of Don Cheadle and him in a car racing through the streets on the phone with the other Mr. Guy, the boss from Fight Club.
Yeah.
And that could have been set up in 3 minutes.
It feels like something was cut out, because when it goes from Hugh Jackman talking to John Travolta and he's saying, you know, it's like, I'm done, I'm out of here. And he leaves and they go after him, and John Travolta, Gabriel, he's like, just let him go. He'll be back. And then he goes to the house to get his daughter and finds, you know, dead ex, Porn King, Backdoor Productions guy, finding them dead and his daughter missing. The very next scene just shows them in the coffee shop. Like, it doesn't show him coming back. It doesn't show a confrontation. It doesn't show them getting in a vehicle. Going over to the coffee shop, it just shows.
That's what I'm saying.
What I'm agreeing with you is that it feels like there's a deleted scene somewhere.
I don't think there's a deleted scene. What I think it is, it's lazy screenwriting. If you wrote that action sequence into the beginning, which I'm positive they did, that's why you have that whole rant thing. It's just a bridge, so they don't have to explain like why they get there and stuff. So for a film that takes so much time giving exposition on minor characters for no reason whatsoever, they go out of their way to just skip this one chunk of how they get to the situation, not only where they're all in the coffee shop talking, but I'm assuming the cop brought Stanley, but then now Gabriel's like, Stanley, come with me, and everyone's like, okay, I guess I am, and no one's acting like, well, why, what, you can't, I mean, it was like, everything, there's, I agree with you. There's a gap missing there. Doesn't explain that.
Right.
But I don't think it was cut. It's just lazy.
Now, I never owned this on DVD, and this came out at the very dawn of DVDs coming out,
mm-hmm.
where it was starting to, or had already successfully phased out Laserdisc. So DVDs at this time, they were doing box sets, they were doing special features, deleted scenes, trailers, featurettes.
Mm-hmm.
There could be something on the DVD or now Blu-ray that would actually explain what we're talking about right now. There could be that deleted scene. I just don't know.
One thing I was going to say at the beginning of the show is I really didn't do any research on the film except for looking up the hacker stuff because I was just curious. Hollywood always bungles, you know,
always.
Computer stuff, electronic advanced technology. They always fuck it up.
That comes into my challenge, my spin the wheel challenge when we're ready for that, yes.
I didn't do any research because of that. And honestly, it's like I'm not that. It's a cheesy action film. It feels like it's just slapped together. It's not like a huge bungled production like Baron Munchausen. It's just like, yeah, they're just making a fucking action film. They don't give a shit. It's that kind of like lackadaisical, just, you know, connect the dots, fill in the blanks. It's the formula. Everyone will like it. And then we'll have a speech at the beginning complaining about the formula. By the way, have you seen, there's an alternate ending.
I never saw it.
I remember from the DVD. Huh? I just remembered. There's an alternate ending where she comes back to the boat and tells Travolta that Stanley screwed them and all the money's gone. He has it.
Oh.
and then Travolta, and she's like, you going to go after him? He's like, nah, we had fun. It was a good time. And they sail off happy. And then the voiceover, instead of terrorists being blown up, it's like Greenpeace being given like $500 million.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, so they actually made an alternate ending that was the ending that they were complaining about beginning the film. And can you imagine putting that fucking ending in?
They probably tested it with that ending.
It's possible, yeah.
The one we saw, they probably redid.
Yeah, they could have done that, or they could have shot both endings. I mean, it's hard to guess. It's definitely a possibility. Oh. But yes, it's just how convoluted this kind of stuff is. If you're not even if the ending's like even up in the air, then what was the whole fucking setup for? And again, they botched the setup on of the whole film. It's almost like it was supposed to be a Tarantino bank heist halfway through. It was like, no, this is not fucking working. Just get Travolta instead. It really has that kind of feel to it. It's like we're supposed to be like that, and then no, swab him out, but leave the opening bit because I worked hard on that.
Yeah. Right.
Now on IMDb, it's currently rated at
6.5, yeah, which it's a lot higher than I thought it was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but I don't think this movie is I don't think it's less than a 5.
You're not going for an 8?
Of course not. This doesn't deserve a 7. I don't think it deserves a 5. I think a solid 6 is okay for this. Its flaws, it's an entertaining movie.
I like the action sequences.
Yeah.
My major gripes with the film are the writing, basically. But it's not a bad film. I wasn't angry at the film.
No.
You know,
no.
It's one of those. I was annoyed. I was annoyed with the film.
I remember when it came out. And I saw it, and I'm like, yeah, I get why, you know, critics didn't love it, but I'm like, they shouldn't have hated it.
Yeah, it's underwhelming, and it's underwhelming at the wrong time can kill you.
Yeah.
I think that's it. And it was trying to be overwhelming. When you're trying to be ecstatic, I mean, one thing I'll give it props for is the hardest thing to do is make hacking, like, action-y. So when they do the hacking montage and he's dancing around and had the beat and the music, I mean, that was a great job. That's actually one of the more upbeat parts of the film is when he's hacking, and that should be like the, I mean, how do you make hacking a you know, how do you watch it? It's like watching paint dry.
Yeah, well, of course, because it's not fun like that.
They got him dancing around like a character in a Jeff Deaver fucking novel.
So I go 6 on this.
I agree. 6 it is.
So I'm on the numbers because I'm curious to what else came out that summer because it's competition. But like 2 weeks before Pearl Harbor came out, and I was a huge success. I mean, like, it made a ton of money. But the same weekend that it came
critical, out. Critical bomb.
Yeah, the same weekend that it came out, Atlantis, The Lost Empire came out that weekend.
I remember that.
Evolution, comedy. That's the one with, what's this? David Duchovny.
Mm-hmm.
And then Swordfish. So that
was the password?
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, don't use Swordfish as a password and not reference the Marx Brothers in the film, you motherfuckers. Oh!
Then the very next weekend, which pretty much killed it, was Tomb Raider. So that was a huge expectation, even though it was a terrible movie.
Worst film, better received.
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's crazy. Dr. Dolittle 2 the following weekend, and the first Fast and Furious movie came out.
And that did bank.
And then end of June, you had AI, artificial intelligence. And then now you're moving into July. So you're out of June. By that point, Swordfish is a distant memory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not, it might be making a little bit of money here and there theatrically. But the biggest movie of the summer, I think, I'm just looking at these numbers. Might have been the Planet of the Apes movie. The terrible one with Mark Wahlberg.
Oh, there's you don't have to say the terrible one. That's you got to narrow it down more after that. Mark Wahlberg's fine. You can't say the terrible one.
Got it.
They're all terrible.
They're
most overrated sci-fi franchise in history, Planet of the fucking Apes.
Yeah.
Ugh. Sorry.
I mean, Pearl Harbor doesn't count because it didn't come out in the summer, but that looks like that made the most money. Mm-hmm. Shrek actually made the most money, I think, in 2001, but that's also not a summer movie. It came out in the spring. Anyhow. So, yeah, it had no competition, no real competition. Had it been a better film, it might have made a lot more money. So.
Yeah, word of mouth didn't help because there wasn't any.
Yeah, no. What I remember that I was in school that summer. Yeah, that Final Fantasy movie came out that summer.
Mm-hmm.
Oof, that was a bad one. All right. Anyway. All right. So we're going 6 on that. I'm good with that. That sounds great. Should we spin the wheel?
Yeah. So what's on the wheel this week?
All right. So on the wheel. Here, let me throw that up on the screen.
I would like to formally request that we dub it the Wheel of Suck.
Wheel of Suck. Okay.
Yes, and I can start labeling our Wheel of Suck episodes. Any film that is chosen by the Wheel of Suck will have its own special playlist on the YouTube channel.
Got it. All right. Do you want to hear the movies? These are all movies.
Yes, please.
These are all movies that have to do with technology, IT. Even futuristic, you know, dystopian or possibly even, what's the other word I'm looking for? Not dystopian, the opposite of dystopian.
Utopian.
Utopian. Thank you very much. Movies like that. So these are these movies all have that in some way. This is what we have. We have Hackers. Oh, and these are also movies that we've never reviewed, obviously.
You sure about that?
Yeah.
All right.
So we have Hackers, which came out in 1995. We have Virtuosity.
Ha!
Also 1995. There's actually quite a few movies from 1995 on this. Apparently, technology, internet, there was like a whole thing in 95.
The future!
Yeah. iRobot. There's a movie called Gamer with Gerard Butler and Michael C. Hall.
I have it on the Plex. I never watched. I've seen like a 2-minute clip of it.
Okay. Lawnmower Man.
Oh, God.
Fear.com. So there's.
Oh shit! Yeah, I remember that. I saw that.
So that's a horror film.
You ever
film.
See that?
No, I've never seen it.
Oh, that's
is that
a good
the one,
one
where like the whatever is killing everyone can come out of the computer. It can control the printer, prints out things like "you're going to die," or prepare for death, or look it, behind you, or some stupid shit
no,
like that.
Not like nothing like that, but it's so bad.
Okay, Aeon Flux.
Aeon Flux.
Aeon Flux. Aeon Flux. I think it's Aeon, but
There's an A in there. It's Aeon. It's Aeon.
It's a soft A. Okay. Johnny Mnemonic.
Johnny Mnemonic.
Mnemonic. Free Jack.
Oh God, that's one of Holly's films. She likes that.
She likes that one.
That's a film from that time period that she liked.
Mick Jagger doing it.
Yep. She
it's
liked
another
that
perfect example. Like,
don't.
No,
don't.
I'm
just
keep saying.
Going. Just keep going.
It's a perfect example of someone winning an Oscar and then go like Anthony Hopkins wins an Oscar, then goes and does Free Jack.
No, save it. Save it for the show. Keep going.
Ultraviolet. Mila Jovovich.
Oh, yeah. I never even bothered.
Yeah. Antivirus.
Oh, yeah.
Which is funny because Antivirus is like Bill Gates. Like Tim Robbins plays a Bill Gates type character.
Yeah.
It's Bill Gates. That's who it is. Surrogates. Bruce,
yep.
Bruce Willis.
Yep.
And
I think we've reviewed that.
Are you sure?
I'm not sure, but I'll double check. It won't matter if it doesn't come up.
I don't sweat it. I don't believe we've reviewed it.
Okay. We probably talked about
we've
it, but
watched
didn't formally
it.
Review
we watched it.
It
together.
I think we mentioned it on a show, but we didn't actually do a whole episode. So, okay.
And the last film, The Net, with Sandra Bullock.
Oh, that's another one Holly likes.
These are all... Now, I have a soft spot for the film Hackers just because it's fun. But
yeah.
These are all pretty bad movies.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. So let's spin the fucking wheel.
I'm ready.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. Big money. All right. It ended up on Antitrust.
Oh,
the Bill Gates, Tim Robbins, Ryan Phillippe movie.
Ooh, that's gonna be nasty.
Yeah. I gotta be honest. I was kind of hoping for something else.
Me too.
Like a Lawnmower Man. Put that on there, hoping that it would land on Lawnmower Man or Ultra.
I really want to do Fear.com now.
Well, we could spin this wheel again next week. I mean,
yeah, we'll hang on.
I mean,
to the
you
wheel.
Got two wheel spins. I mean, we could get two wheel spins out of this.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I made different wheels. I have a new wheel set up for 1996. That's going to be the next year we have to fill.
Oh, okay. Well, why don't we do it like this? We'll do Antitrust.
Yep.
But why don't you give me any years to fill, and I'll put a bunch of movies in there, and I'll use it for when I'm ready to challenge.
Okay.
All right. Does it sound good?
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Either way.
All right. Let me get that out of the screen there. All right. So there you go. So Antitrust, that came out in, what year did that come out? 2001.
Oh, we're still in 2001, too. Ugh.
It's interesting. Well, listen, when we were doing that the year, I mean, we spent.
Well.
Between 1973 and I think we stopped in 1979.
Yeah, we got stuck in the 70s. There's way too many.
We didn't get out of the 70s.
Way too many films
I think
in
we
the
spent
70s.
A yeah. year and a half to 2 years in that.
You need it.
In that.
You need it.
Decade.
You need a bit of randomness in there. I like randomness in my decision choices, and the wheel helps out tremendously.
I think so.
I think the wheel of suck is going to be repeating thing on the show.
It says you could put 300. You could put 300 choices in the wheel. I'm wondering if we should just throw 300 movies in there and spin this fucking thing.
Oh shit! Jesus Christ, man! 300 films. You just want to max it out and just like
max it out, spin it. Let it pick every week till we got 300 movies. We could put all the years that we need, and then we could just throw a whole shit ton of bad movies in there.
Let's workshop that, but I like it.
All right. All right, let's end this.
Yes, yeah.
Let's do that.
Yes. Yes, let's get hook up the helicopter to the bus and fly us out of here, sir.
Sure. Let's make sure we don't hit a sign or a building. We're going to do that part right. We're not going to hit any signs or buildings.
Well, who's flying the helicopter?
I mean, certainly not me. Not a helicopter.
Well, then,
pilot.
If I'm flying, we're definitely hitting some signs. Just hang tight.
Well, I mean, if you give me an Xbox controller, we'll probably be fine. Otherwise, we're not.
I'm aiming for the signs. Hang on. Okay. Go for it.
All right, everybody. Episode 413 of Movie Sucktastic. As always, thank you for joining us this week while we review Swordfish. You can go to our brand new website, moviesucktastic.com, and you can download, listen, or watch this episode all from the website. It's really
beautiful.
Thank you. I worked very, very hard on it.
It's beautiful.
From beyond, thank you. No one's gonna get that with us, but
I don't care.
So you can go there and you can do all of those things. Plus, there's other things on there too to do. So please check it out. You can email us from there, themovieguys@moviesucktastic.com. The phone number is there to leave us voicemail. It's 908-514-4470. You can go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesucktastic, and you can see everything we post there. You can also download a podcast player. You can get ours by going to moviesucktastic.com/mst.apk, or just download your favorite podcast player and search for MovieSucktastic. You can also go to iTunes and you can download or listen to the show there as well. Do you have any words of wisdom, Mr. Wilson?
Wheel of Suck!
And with that, we will review Antitrust next week. Join us live next Thursday at, lately we've been going 7 p.m., but between 7 and 8. Just
Eastern
time. Yeah, between 7 and 8 Eastern time. Come check it out. Come hang out with us while we review another movie.
Yep.
All right, everybody. We'll talk to you next week.
Later.
Bye-bye.